Welcome to Holden Village. Today, in the fabulous fireside room, today's speaker is Diane Shelton, and she will be speaking on taking cues. So let's listen in on Diane Shelton.
Speech and language clinicians have used over the years to help children talk more, to get more information from them, to engage them in conversations. And over the course of using these, lots of adults that I've worked with at the college level have come back and said, you know, they really work for my family. These are things I wish I would have known a long time ago with my family. And so that's what I'm sharing with you. This is not therapy. This is simply weaving meaning in your life through threads of communication. At Holden Village, you know, we hear about so many things that are outside of us. Big things. I sat in a session on the Middle East. Things that are very important, and of course our own jobs. There's just a multitude of skills and abilities and talents that come to Holden Village, as you all know. But what I'd like you to do for this hour is kind of pull in and focus on yourself and your family. Think about the people in your small circle. One of the things that I get concerned about as a teacher of young children, and I certainly see the families that are struggling so hard right now in our country to make it financially, to make it emotionally with one another, to be successful, to have their children be successful. And one of the big barriers that I see for our families is that we have very little time in our day and in our life for meaningful, engaging communication. Our days tend to be going here, going there, kind of getting through the schedule, the routine, and making sure that our children don't embarrass us in public, making sure that they do the right things. And that's all important. And we want to teach them, of course, our values and our thoughts and let them know those kinds of things. But critically in their life, is also that someone, some major person in their life, one person, that's what makes the difference, has a meaningful, engaging encounter with them each day. Now, I don't think that's true just for children. I think that's very true for all of us. I don't know about you, but when I go to sleep at night, if I'm, you know, thinking about the day, and I can't recall one meaningful conversation or encounter, the day feels pretty empty. And so that's what these threads are about. They're not complex, they're very simple. Today, we're going to be talking about taking cues from the people that you care about. And there's a shift when we start thinking about taking cues. The shift is from the focus on ourselves and how we feel and how we're responding outwardly, looking at you, looking at another person. Let me see. Tell me your name again.
Phyllis.
Can you tell us about your experience with your daughter? The ice cream thing.
Yeah. No, a week or so ago, both she and I wear glasses, and she had to get new ones, and then I got my new prescription glasses, and they're much darker than anything I've ever had before. And then we picked up the glasses and did some shopping and ended up near ice cream. And she always finagles to get, she has a routine she goes through and finagles to get the ice cream. Part of it, though, is that I'm coming to understand she reads my mood. Well, I was wearing these, and it was the darndest song and dance she'd go through. She was right out there trying to figure out what am I, and it was literally, she was. Couldn't figure out my mood as to what, how to approach to get the ice cream. And it was so obvious. And then on the other hand, she'd gotten new glasses, and I noticed her eyes more. The old lenses, her old frames, I seem to be more aware of these now. I see her eyes as opposed to seeing her glasses. Mm-hmm. So it was rather, it was comical, but it was also very enlightening, because if I were staring at me, I don't know what I was doing.
Trying to get behind those glasses.
Yeah.
Really the key. Well, I'd like to start out today by having everyone close their eyes. And you can do that now and take a nice, just relaxing breath and think about yourself a little bit. And I'd like you to think about a gift. Someone is giving you a gift. And I'm going to describe what that box looks like. It's a big box. It's covered with bright red and silver wrapping. There's a huge bow on top. And the person is walking in the room, and this gift is for you. And the ribbon, the strings along, coming from the bow, are long and trailing as the person brings in the box. And you can tell by how the person is carrying the box that something in that box is not, whatever's in the box is not real light, but it's not really heavy. And the wrapping paper kind of glistens in the light as the person brings it in. Okay, we've got a good picture of that beautiful gift that's walking in the door for you. Okay, open your eyes. And now, I'd like to just go around and I'd like all of you to tell me what's inside that box. What's the gift? Not all of you. I'll just randomly point. What was in your gift?
I haven't figured it out yet.
Okay. Who's got an idea of what their gift is?
Damn comforter.
A comfort, dumb comforter, okay?
A stuffed animal.
Stuffed animal. Who's got another one?
I had flowers in my hand.
Flowers.
I had energy.
Energy. Anyone else have something in their gift?
I had my family.
Your family and your gift. Pardon me?
A French horn.
A French horn. Now, think about each of us as a gift, as a box walking in, brightly wrapped box. We have lots of cues outwardly about ourselves. We come with some wrapping, don't we? Our height, our weight, our face. Our energy. But really, just by looking at the cue that we see, do we really know what's inside that person? By looking at the affect, if I look at you, can I figure out what's inside there? Probably not. And that's why I think it's very difficult to read cues from people. It's hard to know, what does that look mean? And so what we're going to do today is try some things to help us tune into the cues that people give us. Now yesterday, who was here yesterday? Tell us, Phyllis, what was the major thing we were talking about yesterday?
We label things. Mm-hmm. And life is not a quiz.
So labeling. One of the ways that we can check out whether the cues that we're getting or how we're reading them is by having that person label that cue. Okay. When we talk about labeling, we talk about labeling feelings, we talk about labeling expectations, we talk about labeling actions, we talk about labeling turn-taking, whose turn is it to talk? And when we read cues, we can use that as a way of clarifying. So if I'm reading your cue, and I say, what I'm observing, because that's the first thing we do with a cue, is we observe. How are you sitting? And we do it automatically, don't we, with your family? You walk in and you just automatically take a look at maybe their body, how it's sitting, whether they're intent, whether they're kind of bored, whatever it is. So that's our first observation of a cue. And so maybe then the next step would be an interaction. Checking out. What I see is that you're kind of slumped down. You don't seem to be really looking at me. Tell me about that. Tell me how you're doing. So an interaction piece is the next part, and that's hard. And I think that part is harder with the ones we care about. Somebody said yesterday, this stuff is easier with strangers than with the people that we know. I think it is too. Why don't we, right now, get together with somebody that you're with and just brainstorm some cues, some observation things that you see in your family or with the people that you're with. Just list the cues. You don't have to get into the interaction piece. Just start thinking about what do you see from the people you're with. Okay, and it can be your children that aren't here, it can be a significant other that's not here, but just talk to another person about that. Brainstorm cues. What do you see? Like Phyllis just gave us a good example. The cue that that her daughter would try and look at her eyes. That's a cue. In my family, I have a 10-year-old daughter who doesn't know when she's hungry. She acts after. Too late. I mean, she doesn't read her own cues, right? Which is another piece. It's hard for us to even know where we're at sometimes. But she can be way past the edge of being hungry. And the way I know she's hungry, the cue I get, is she starts getting mad at me about absolutely everything under the sun. I can do nothing right. No human being on earth can do anything right. That's my cue that I need to get food into her. So, I would like you to stop and think, what are the cues that you see? And if you're with a significant other, talk to them about the cues that they give. When I was married, which I'm not anymore, there was a point in the marriage where there was no longer a desire to know, to read the other person. So those are important components. There also has to be the right time. We can't always be labeling our feelings. We can't always be reading cues. We can't always be attempting to engage with other people. Phyllis gave an example this morning of trying to get some information from her child who had been in junior minors and minors yesterday. And it fell flat. The child didn't respond. That's part of reading cues. Part of reading cues is, do we choose the right times based on what the information that individual is giving us? And sometimes, and the other piece is, it's okay to try. You get no response. That's a real cue, isn't it? I don't want to talk about it. What do you want to know for? Those kinds of things accuse it. This is over. We'll try another time. And it's important to stop at that point. What I think one of the things that happens is we end up getting into incredible power struggles with children, with people we live with. And it's because We sort of don't know when to stop. I want to talk to you right now about this. Right now. And that other person is letting us know in many ways they don't want to. So one of the things we talk about is wait time. So if we get a cue from someone that they're not interested in giving us more information, in engaging with us, then we need to give them some wait time. So it's not just that we read the cues, but that we respond to them with respect. Now these things sound kind of basic, but I think what happens is that we get busy, we're focusing in on ourselves and what we want right now, how we feel right now, and the twist is to move out, to look at what am I getting back. And then when I get that back, when we do have that time to engage, then it can be meaningful. I'd like you all to now think about some times when, or what happens in your family or in your relationship when you don't take time to read the cues. What are the consequences when we don't read cues? We just talked about what the cues are. Now let's talk about what happens when we ignore them. I'll give you an example. When I ignore my daughter's, you know, my first response, the thing about reading cues and tuning into people and engaging is that it's hard work. I think it's one of the hardest things we do on earth. When she starts getting hungry, We know those cues from the people we live with. I mean, they are ingrained, right? We know them. So we get this little tiny hint. And my first response is, I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to deal with it. That's not what I want to do right now. I do not want to try and find food that will please her at this moment. And so I ignore that cue. And what happens? It builds and it builds and it builds, and pretty soon it's not pretty. It's nasty. It's a very negative encounter. And what I think happens is that then we start cycles, negative cycles, that are there, they just build. And they get bigger and bigger and bigger. And at the end of that, some really negative consequences can happen. People leave. They leave relationships. People check out emotionally. They just shut down. So you're living in the same house, but there's no communication. It's gone. People get angry. People find other people to meet their needs. So the consequences of not having meaningful communication, I think, are pretty dire. And yet, these simple pieces are what can hold us together. Now, this doesn't need to escalate. If I started reading cues up here from my daughter, this whole thing, we don't have to start building a negative interaction around not eating. But what often happens is that it happens maybe twice the first week. Things are insidious. They creep in. We don't even know they're happening. The third week, or next week, it happens four times, and it builds and builds and builds and builds. Until all we need is a look, and it's a power struggle over food. And it shuts down a great part of our day in terms of how we interact with that person, that child. So, I'd like you to take a minute and talk to the person next to you. Think about what happens in your family When pews aren't read, do people shut down? Do people get mad? Do people leave? Do you come back and talk about it later? Does it just get built up? When we miss each other, when we miss those cues and don't engage, what happens in your family? No communication. Pardon me?
No communication.
The what?
Is that the end result or the beginning? No communication.
Mm-hmm. You had a good...
Well, when my son and I don't communicate, I think the biggest thing I miss is intimacy and a sense of family togetherness that comes from looking at a variety of different situations he gets in or situations I get in, and they're funny or amusing or they're appealing to us because we react the same way towards them. And if we don't connect and if we don't talk and if we don't communicate with each other, then we don't have a sense of shared heritage or a shared tradition in the way we see things, the things we find are funny, and in the way we treat the world.
You were just talking that it doesn't, reading cues and then what you do with those, it doesn't happen just by accident that engagement will take place. And she asked me, well, what do you do? Because I'm also a single parent with two children. And one of the cues that I've gotten from my daughter in particular is that the best time of the day for her to talk with me is at night, and she likes to crawl in bed and we snuggle and talk. Whereas with my son, it's a totally different kind of interactive time. It might be over dinner someplace alone. But the thing that I also realize is that if I don't read the cues correctly from them, if I try and barge in when they're not ready, that the wall goes up and it does stop communication and it builds. Others?
Yeah,
so that
people
would like to share?
I'm trying to learn it from other people. In fact, my number of things, one of the issues is that if we bring that kind of attention, if I feel a need, I got to talk about this now with her. Don't. Wait till next day so that some of the negative energy is there. Mm-hmm. Let it go for a while.
Even though your desire right at that moment
just
is, let's talk about it. And that's how I am too. I understand that perfectly well. Come on. No, I don't want to wait. And so that's the Scott Peck talks about in The Road Less Traveled, sacrificing yourself. And I think that that's a sacrifice. I think that's a sacrifice of who we are when we need to clamp it shut and wait and take a cue from another person. That's a really good point.
Yeah. Go ahead. But the danger in that is that then it never gets talked about.
But he's saying that you sort of make an appointment.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to set some time. Mm-hmm. Because you're right. That's a great way of just one person shutting down and not having that communication.
I'm reflecting a personal experience where in seeking to engage with the fact of the crowd, it made it worse. It was just, that's my life experience. Mm-hmm.
I know my husband and I worked together in the same business, and so it took us a while, and I finally just, we don't discuss anything after 8 o'clock. It just, or you sit there all night long worrying this problem, and finally, 8 o'clock tonight or 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, it didn't make any difference, so we all might as well get a good night's sleep. Mm-hmm. So I kind of consciously stopped myself from bringing up it would be real easy to bring home and carry it on through into the evening, mm-hmm. where that didn't work.
You bringing up kind of perfectly the next step in taking cues. The first part is the observation, and you and your husband observed, I mean, one of the observations you had is that it's not working to talk about work at home. And there was probably enough interaction there that you figured that out too.
Yeah.
And for the future. One of the things with reading cues is it doesn't just end with, I'm going to read these cues, we're going to discuss it. Then the fun part is, how can we plan? We're going to put it on the table, we're going to label it, and then plan for the future. And in your circumstance, the plan for the future is, I want to talk about the cue we're getting in the relationship might be, I want to talk about things right now, I don't. Okay, you talk, you discuss it, and you come up with a plan. And what helps me sometimes is to even label, because I am one of those people that wants to talk about it right now, to say, I really want to talk about this right now, I really want to do that, but our agreement is that we'll talk about it later. So at least I can even say, label, this is what I want to do, but this is what needs to happen in the future. You had your hand.
I was going to make the same point that she did, that if you don't talk at that moment, then somehow it becomes more difficult to do it later.
Mm-hmm.
I find that the ramifications of confrontation or confrontational discussions become, if I'm intent on the problem, for me it seems like let's get this over with, rather than delaying it. I'm not thinking so much in my marriage because we don't have this kind of problems, but at work, if I postpone an issue, then I'll usually let it just drag on, because I don't want to face.
But the point here is that if you say to that person that you're having a conflict with, I really want to talk about this. Obviously there's something going on, you label it however, and that person says, I can't do that right now. That's a definite message. That then you can go into that negotiating piece and make a plan for the future. Because when we force a person who's not ready for that confrontation, we probably aren't going to get anything resolved anyway. So it's respecting where the other person is and, you know, taking note of that.
Yeah. Can I just ask one thing about that? I find sometimes, however, that even the effort to make a plan is perceived as talking about something I don't want to talk about. By the other person. So I say, I really want to talk about this. I'm really upset about this.
Mm-hmm.
The other person not responding,
mm-hmm.
just say, well then, can we at least talk about when we're going to talk about it,
mm-hmm.
is perceived as a sort of sneaky way of talking about it.
And that's another cue for you, isn't it?
No, I don't want to talk about it. No, I don't want to talk about it later. No, I don't ever want to talk about it. Just leave me alone.
And at that time, that's exactly, she's bringing up a good point, because you're getting another cue at that point that you then need to respond to, which is, what are your options, Dan? What are your options at that point? Your options are to pursue it, and you're just going to get more and more shut down, and this is going to happen. Or you truly wait until the cue is there that this person is approachable. And then you label, go back to what we talked about yesterday, which is you label, you know, this is how I feel about it. These are my feelings. Not what happened, but my feelings. And I'd like to work on a solution. I'd like to work on a plan. The thing too, we talked about the desire. There has to be the desire. If there's not the desire, it won't fly.
If you're starting into an area where a person's family or individual together on speakable things, we just want to talk about this, period.
Remember we talked about that yesterday?
Yeah.
You were here.
Yeah, but even more so, I'm talking about the deeper skeletons.
You bet.
That I don't, you know, I know there's a bad side to me, but do not complain about me, so we'll never talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
But, you know, isn't the interesting part is that we all know it anyway?
Yeah.
I mean, what's the secret?
I know.
Yeah, right. I'd like to try something right now. I've done this with other people, and if you're not comfortable, you certainly don't have to do it. It's an exaggerated, I love to get into these exaggerated things so we have a sense of what it feels like. Let me just talk through it a little bit, and then you'll have a chance to try it. I'd like one of you to pretend that you're a 2-year-old. Because I think if there are any age, if there's any age of the human being that gives us just really direct cues, it's 2-year-old. Anybody disagree with that? And you know what? That 2-year-old hasn't learned to do what you're talking about, cover up that dark side. The dark side's right out there with the happy side. One of the things also that we most frequently do with 2-year-olds is ignore their initial cues. We wait until those 2-year-olds escalate and we no longer can ignore their cues. Well, we all kind of are still too in some parts of us. And if I can share, your son, my children, all of us, if our cues aren't read, what do we do with our behaviors? Escalate. We shut down really hard and don't talk for a really long time, or we get really mad, right? I mean, we escalate too. It might be a silent escalation, but boy, it's escalated. So, we get to be 2. We're going to switch this so you'll each get a chance to be 2. Now, when you're 2 in this little thing we're going to do, the adult is going to be holding on to your favorite blanket. So Peggy's 2 and Richard is holding on to her favorite blanket. Now, as a 2-year-old, the only word that you are going to be allowed to use in this scenario, and I know that some 2-year-olds know a lot more words, just is mine. Okay? Now, you only can use that word mine, but you can escalate as far as you want to get the adult's attention who's holding your favorite blanket, who is ignoring them. That adult is talking to another adult, busy doing something else, but that adult is going to be ignoring it. And I'm going to have the 2-year-olds try and get that favorite blanket from the adult for about 6 seconds, and it will be long enough.
It's going to be dangerous.
I would like you not to hurt. No physical aggression. You may only, because you've been taught to keep your hands to yourself, not hurt other people, all those things. And we know that toddlers would, at this point, be doing far more than just saying mine. Mm-hmm. All right? So tuning into the fact that she's saying, I'm tired. That's a direct cue. And sometimes we don't look like we feel. You know, that's the point of the package. We don't look like we feel. So we get messages from the people we live with, like, I'm feeling sick. And I look at my daughter and say, well, you look good. How many times do we do that? We do that all the time. I don't want to do this. Well, it's fun. Well, who's it fun for? Whose cue are we reading? The person who's telling us, showing us, or not showing us? I was at a conference one time with a group of people, and I'd started a new medication. I think to this day I was having seizures. It's been a while. I was having these incredible experiences and headaches and that kind of thing. And I kept saying to these people, I don't feel well. I don't feel well. They just tuned it out. No response. I probably didn't look sick enough. You know, we all have, and it's all relative, isn't it? How sick do we have to look? How tired do we have to look? What does that package have to look like on the outside before you say, I will tune into you. I will listen to you. I will hear you. And how can we do that outside of our tiny circle of our life, our friends and our family? How can we do that with other countries? if we're missing the cues that we get every day from the people we live with. The upside of reading cues is that we can engage. We can know what you need and want. And we can make a plan. Somebody over here had a statement, and I...
No, I was just going to make a comment, you know, when you were saying that, and this has happened, when somebody wants something from you, they don't care if you're sick or not. And, you know, it's just, you know, this clicking in the mind, because I've experienced that, even when you don't feel like you can give it, if they still want it, they're going to ignore, no matter if you're laying on the floor dead. I want this from you.
And one of the things we talked about yesterday to keep in mind is the modeling. How do we model? How do we show our children that we're reading their cues? It has to start there. It has to start with respecting another person. Now, this is the kind of thing that I can't make you do. I can't make you read my cues. The only thing I can do is start tuning into you. And when we've gone years and years and years of not doing that, expect that it's going to take some time. It's going to take some time for the others that you live with to realize what's happening and to change behaviors and to tune in. Or those that you work with. Do we read the cues of the people we work with? So much of our life is like this. And the threads that we're presenting here, that we're working on, hopefully we'll become more engaged with one another. But it's also a risk. There's a risky part. And a risky part, I think, is that we start developing expectations that aren't labeled and that other people don't know about. I expect you to read my cues. So maybe when you're on the floor feeling awful, say, I can't do that for you. That's not a possibility. You will need to go here or get some help. You know, labeling at that point what you need, what you want. Any other thoughts about cues? Thinking about how you can start interacting and using them? Yeah?
The subsidiary thing you did, the way that we had both of us at our jobs, we agree this a lot in our jobs. When you get home, more often than not, you do not have the energy to be the people who want to be to each other and to our children, vice versa.
Excuse me. Okay. Thanks, guys.
They're taking cues.
They're labeling what they're doing, which is really important to me. I need to know where they are. That's my point. That our lives have become so busy and our positions have become so entwined with other people that I come home at night and the last thing I want to do is sit down and chit-chat. And so what I'm suggesting with these kinds of techniques, labeling, taking cues, is that there are things that we can do, we can weave throughout our day. And it can be with a word. It can be with a touch. It can be with a look. Tell me about your day. It's good to see you. You look tired tonight. Are you feeling like cooking? You look kind of tired. Maybe we should do something else. You look like your day was great. You brought home some interesting things. And you talk for a minute, you talk for 2 minutes, you intertwine it in the day. Those are hard things to do though. But it's, again, the desire and the commitment to engage. The other thing that I would think is that by engaging, what I think is that by engaging in each other, I get energy. When I go out with my son and he starts talking to me about the possibilities of the universe as opposed to what my work mode and thinking is whether this child is going to meet their goals and objectives on their IEP, I get energy. There's an energy that comes from engagement with the people that we care about. It's a renewal, it's a refreshment. And we take that time.
Explain to me what's going on, and I realize that I tell my husband, all you have to do is take the kids in traffic, in the dark, and they'll start talking about anything and everything on their mind. What is the scenario there? What is the setup there?
I love that. That's true.
It is. I mean, Mom, what is rape? I've been asked that. Mm-hmm. And what, Mark asked me something. And yeah, it was all 5 o'clock traffic. We've got to be someplace. And then they come up with that sort of stuff. Sitting there, what's going on there? Maybe structure this someplace else.
What they have is a captive audience.
Is that it?
Yeah. You can't go anywhere. You can't say, just a minute, I have to catch the phone. You can't say, just a minute, I have to finish the dishes. Because I don't know about the rest of you at home, but I've got 16,000 things going on at once, right? And so do they. So we're never sitting down. Even here, one of the things I wish is that we had lingering meals.
Yes.
So that we could have conversations over coffee with the people that we're sitting with. That lingering piece isn't there. But and we're not captive. We're always off to this, off to that, which makes you think about, when we talk about cues in a broader sense, that's a cue that you need more enclosed time. When you see, that's a great cue for you. My children talk when I'm there for them and can't leave and do 1,000 other things. So how do you set that up? That's when you engage. And that's a cue. When do you engage as your family? And if you can think about that, set those times up to engage. You had something in the back.
I have one of these 2-year-olds that you're talking about, almost 2, and also a 3.5-year-old. And my problem is not taking their cues, because I know that they want to go outside and play all day long. The problem is that we live in the city, and we have a very small backyard, no fence, on a busy street, and I can't let them be out there by themselves. It's too dangerous. Mm-hmm. So I have to go out and supervise them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can't do that all day long. And so even if I say, okay, I'll go out with you in the beginning of the morning and, you know, spend some quality time with you, it's just not enough. These two boys would take every single minute of my day, mm-hmm. and still wouldn't be enough. That's how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of frustrated in knowing, you know, how to respond. It's not just taking the cues. For me, that's the easy part.
You're right. It's what do we do with the cues? And what I'm hearing from you, and we can talk about this outside of here too, is that the cue is the structure isn't working. That's the cue they're giving you. And so then, your job, the interactive piece, is maybe you talk with your husband. If you don't have one, you talk with yourself, write down ideas, and you come up with a plan for action.
Yeah, our plan is to move. We're already moving.
My
suspicion is that when we move to this new house, I will be able to watch them from the kitchen, and I can do my work in the house or whatever needs to be done. But they'll still want me to be outside playing with them at every minute.
And that becomes then setting up your structure and labeling expectations for them and letting them know. I think a lot of times we could digress, and in fact we could have a separate, any of you who are young parents, talking about developmentally appropriate responses to children and development. If you wanted to do a round table, we could do that. I brought some things with, and just how we're raising children these days. Because one of the things that happens is that our families become very, 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 very young child focused.
And so at the whole center of the family becomes the child. And then what happens is pretty soon the child's in charge. And the child is setting the structure and the agenda for the family. And that becomes very uncomfortable for everyone.
And very unhealthy too.
And what?
And very unhealthy. I've seen families
who very unhealthy.
Who has become the focus of the family has in fact ruined the whole family and themselves.
Yep. And what we think we're doing is reading the cues of the child, but we've missed the bigger picture. And also, the reason it's going to ruin the family is as soon as we start giving the child that much power, the child's, what happens is, the child loses all trust because the child innately knows, I can't run this family. I don't have the skills to make the decisions about the big things in life. And so it will the family will slowly disintegrate. And I've watched it happen many times. And the neat thing is, though, it isn't over, because you can take back the family and you can say, I'm in charge, I'm the parent. And that, when you talk about reading cues is not just the small piece. It's not just what I'm getting from you. It's what's the bigger picture here? What does our whole family look like? What's the dynamic? What's happening? How's the interaction? Are we healthy? Are we engaged? Are we talking? Are we arguing most of the time? Is everything a power struggle? Are we avoiding each other? Are we having celebrations and fun? Do I know what you think about death? Do I know what you think about life? Do I know what's important to you and what you care about? Do you know what my values are? Or do we know what time supper is, what time the baseball game is, when the dirty clothes need to be in the laundry? And it's the balance. What's the big picture of your family, of our family? Any last comments? So today you get to go out and read each other's cues. Tune into, listen to, and then engage with each other. But it also, remember, means that you can label your reality. You can label the fact, right now I don't have the energy to engage, but I'd like to talk to you in about half an hour. So any parents are interested in child kinds of just informal things, you can come up afterwards and we can try to set something up. Okay? Alright, let's see. Tomorrow is kind of a fun one that I'll be talking about another thread of communication, and that is I wonder and what if. And there's some wonderful ways to get. Now we've talked about labeling, we've talked about taking cues, and now how do we get some really fun higher level thinking going in our family? How do we get to know some ideas and thoughts and bigger thinking kinds of things from the people we live with?